yesterday we discussed about the concept of vibhuti, how it refers to manifestation of the opulence of God in this world. And we discussed about how metaphors have to be relevant. And we can contextualize the metaphors to understand them. And even if we can't understand some context, still we can understand the principle. So, yeah. Yes, yes. Some comparisons are to specific persons. Say like, Krishna says, I am Rama Shastabhutamam, I am Parshuram. In other places he is saying that, I am a shark among fish, among aquatics. So, there are many sharks. So, in general, the principle is that Krishna manifests his opulence in certain ways in this world. So, those ways may be specific or may be generic. That means, say now, you have given examples of Parshuram, which is like one extreme of the continuum. You may decrease the fan. Also, you can unhook the phone. Parshuram is one extreme of the spectrum where he's only, is one example of Parshuram. On the other hand, we could have thousands of sharks. Now, in the intermediate, we could have someone like Indra. You know, there are not innumerable Indras, but still their number of Indras are not as many as sharks, correct. So, that would mean that Krishna can manifest his opulence through various aspects of nature. And those aspects may not can be entirely generic or can be entirely specific or can be somewhere in between the two. For example, now, later on we'll see today, Masanam Margarshi Shoham Rutunam Kusumakaraha. So among the months I am Margashish, among the seasons I am the flower bearing spring. So now this is something which is recurring. So every year it triggers. So within that specific category, say among months, Margashisha is distinctive because of certain characteristics, because of the sacredness, because of the appropriateness for religious occasions. Then that is considered to be represented. But within that set, it will, when as the set recurs, it will recur again and again and again. Similarly, now within avatars, or within the Shaktyavish avatars, we could say, Parshuram is given as a representative over there. So here he may be one, here he may be the cyclic, with every season or every year, every cycle of seasons or every year. And here it may be among all aquatics, there may be thousands of sharks. So the principle is that that particular aspect within that set is having something distinctive. Now that aspect may be singular or plural. That will vary according to what aspect is being talked about. Is that clear?
I was trying to say principle.
The principle is God's opulence is being manifested over there. That's all. So it could be through one or many within the class. So we discussed till 10.32 and 33 also we had discussed. So let's start with 10.34. Mrityu sarvaharashaham, mrityu sarvaharashaham, udbhavascha bhavishyatam, udbhavascha bhavishyatam, krikirti shrirvakcha narinam, shrirvakcha narinam, smritir medha dhritikshama. This translation, you would like to read? So, there are many thieves who steal away things. But there is only one thief who steals away everything. That is Mrityu. So, that's why Krishna is saying, Sarvaharashaham. So, everything is stolen away. We have Chauragraganyashtakam by Vilva Mangal Thakur, where Krishna is glorified as the greatest of thieves. That is more in a more devotional sense, where Krishna steals the hearts of his devotees, or steals butter, or steals the garments of the gopis. Here he's talking more in a sense of the material world, where a thing is kept. So, among all the thieves, sometimes it's a complete job. So, you know, sometimes when one team wins against another, win completely, they say clean sweep. But death is the ultimate clean sweep. You know, nothing is left. Everything is taken away. So, mrityu sarva harashchaham. And not, but Krishna is not only one-sided. It's not that Krishna only kills. Udbhavashcha bhavishyatam. I am the source of creation also. In the future, whatever will be created, udbhavashcha bhavishyatam, or future manifestations, I am the generating principle. So, we cannot blame God for being the destroyer. Actually, creation, destruction and maintenance are aspects of the creation, of the existence, of the material world. And all three take place by the arrangement of the Lord. So, it's not that God is cruel and He destroys. Nor is it that God is kind when He creates. So, when somebody, a new life is born, people feel happy. Oh, you got a child. And when somebody dies, people say, oh, this is very bad. So, it is not that the bad is due to God and the good is not due to God. Actually, now there was this movie, Oh My God, about which I have just written a book called Oh My God, Reanswering the Question, just published a few days ago. So, there it says, are earthquakes the acts of God? So now, if we say, why should we consider earthquakes as the acts of God? So the idea in the movie is that there is this person who has taken insurance, his house gets destroyed. When he goes to the insurance company, they say that your insurance is only up against acts of man, not acts of God. So because the earthquake is an act of God, so you are not insured against that. So that's the idea. Now actually, in insurance clauses, often there are these fine print clauses which nobody reads. So they consider earthquakes to be acts of God. Now what is the idea of calling earthquake as an act of God? What is the logic behind that? Is it that everything beyond human control is an act of God? Then if we say that, okay, the quaking of the earth is an act of God because it is beyond human control, then the not quaking of the earth is also an act of God. Because even that we cannot do. We cannot say that just because one is common and the other is uncommon, so therefore one is an act of God and one is not an act of God. So, when Krishna is saying, I am the destroyer or I am the creator, he's talking about in the ultimate sense. Just like rains are the cause of vegetation, but rains are not the cause of whether a mango tree grows or a thorny tree grows. There is an intermediate cause for that. And that intermediate cause is the kind of seeds that are sown over there. Similarly, in the case of whether people get prosperity or adversity in this world, the cause only in an ultimate sense is Krishna. But there is an intermediate sense where our own karma is the cause. So these verses cannot be taken out of the context to say that actually it is God who is doing all these things. But what is understood is when this sort of destruction happens, then sometimes such a power is demonstrated that it is completely beyond human capability. And that indicates that, okay, such a great power. It is a kind of godly power this is. Similarly, when creation happens, actually it's a magical, mysterious process. No, it is. It is not just that the lust and the lusty products of two human beings or two living beings, whatever species, can just produce new life. That can just produce some ejection and reception of fluids. But what actually produces new life is the act of God over there. It's the grace of God that is manifesting over there. So, whenever this causality is to be assigned, we have to understand the difference between the intermediate and the ultimate causes. So, here Krishna is talking about the ultimate cause, that He is the generating principle. In the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj, when he doesn't get sons, it is said that actually sometimes the man may be capable of begetting children, the woman may also be fertile. Man may be potent, woman may be fertile, but still a child is not born. And doctors just don't know why it happens. They try, but they can't do anything about it. So, it's not that just the man and woman come together and beget the child. So, Krishna is talking about generating self-principle, being a deeper sense over there. Now, here, the next verse has been explained differently by different Acharyas. Next part of the verse. So, among women, I am Kirti Shri Bhakchanari Nam. So, fame, opulence, Vak is speech, and Smriti is memory, Medha is intelligence, Dhruti and Kshama. So, firmness and patience. Now, interestingly, sometimes we may quote that women are less intelligent. But Krishna is saying, I am intelligence among women. So, if women don't, women are less intelligent, then what does it mean to say that Krishna is intelligence among women? So, we cannot just rip statements out of context. The goddess of, the presiding deity of intelligence is a goddess, not a god. That is Saraswati. So, you know, we cannot say Saraswati Devi is less intelligent. Because she gives the intelligence to everyone. So, here, one of the meanings is that, just as in English, you know, we have masculine nouns and feminine nouns. Now, he is masculine, she is feminine. Now this is with respect to pronouns, but nouns can also be masculine and feminine. You say, gaadi chal rahi hai. We don't say, gaadi chal raha hai in Hindi. So, the nouns are associated with certain genders. So, there, and these nouns can signify certain qualities. So, in Sanskrit, certain qualities are, from the grammatical point of view, considered feminine. And among those feminine qualities, these are characteristic of an attractive person. A person is famous, a person is well-spoken, a person is opulent, a person is has a good memory, good intelligence, patience, determination. These are outstanding qualities that ornament a person. So, these are feminine qualities, not in the sense that they are exclusively possessed by females or primarily possessed by females, but they are, in a grammatical gender sense, these are feminine nouns or feminine qualities. That is one understanding. Now, Srila Prabhupada gives general purport for this when he explains that Srila Prabhupada is explaining over here that when a man is Srila Prabhupada basically, as Prabhupada says, the seven opulences listed are considered feminine. And then, if a person possesses them, he becomes glorious. And Prabhupada gives a brief definition of these qualities also. So now, a Vak, in the Vedic literature, Vak is considered to be like a goddess. Vak Shakti, we say, the power of speech. And it is generally speaking that various languages have various capacities in terms of there are just like say in certain languages certain sounds are not existing. So if I'm not mistaken, in Chinese language there is no R sound. That's why when those Chinese devotees chant the Hare Krishna, they say Lam. They don't have the word R. So among various languages, Sanskrit is said to have such a comprehensive number of, say, syllables, words, and syntax that everything that can be spoken in Sanskrit. Everything that can be thought, rather, and which can be put in the words, can be put in Sanskrit. So, in a sense, language is a technology. Language itself is a technology. You may say emails are a technology for communication. That's true. By writing email, I can communicate with somebody very far away. But language itself is a technology. We may not think of the word technology as compared to language, but technology is basically a mechanism by which something is done. So, when I have certain thoughts and I want to convey my thoughts to you, so I use a technology called language. Now, different technologies have different capacities. For example, in the maybe those people who are very primitive in certain parts of the world, they want to signal something to their neighbors or relatives, and there is danger. Then they would light a fire, and if the fire is reddish, then it indicates danger. If the fire indicates yellowish, it indicates caution, or it indicates all clear. If the fire is greenish, then it indicates, oh, there is a prey over here. We can go and attack and get something, whatever. So now, when the technology for communication is just the color of the puffs of smoke, then through such a technology, abstract philosophical thought cannot be expressed. If I want to say, you are sliding from the mode of passion to the mode of ignorance. How do I show it with puffs of smoke? What colors do I put for that? Isn't it? So, the birds also have some level of communication. So birds, by the way they make sounds, they also communicate some things. But just as puffs of smoke or the chirping of birds, their level of communication, the technology that they are using, just the modulation of certain sounds or the sending of certain smokes, patterns of smoke in the air, that is not adequate enough to convey sophisticated abstract thought. So, just as there are certain limitations associated with certain technologies, so different languages have their own limitations. And the Sanskrit language is especially attuned for expressing abstract thought. And that is one of the primary differences between, say, languages like Sanskrit and languages like English. English is more attuned for expressing concrete thought. Of course, Sanskrit can also express concrete thought. Concrete thought means to name things. Name this, name that, name that. So, that is concrete concept, concrete things and abstract concepts. So Sanskrit is considered to be special because everything that can be thought, that can be expressed in Sanskrit language. Of course, a person will require adequate mastery to do that. But it can be expressed. Brihat Sam Tatha Sam Nam. Next verse. I hope. Tatha Sam Nam. Gayatri Chanda Samaham. Gayatri Chanda Samaham. Masanam Margashishoham. Masanam Margashishoham. Rutunam Kusumakaraha. Rutunam Kusumakaraha. So, Brihat Sam Tatha Sam Nam. So, Sam Veda is basically the Veda of glorification. There are Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda. So, Rig Veda is the Veda for invocation. When sacrifices are to be performed, the devatas have to be invoked. Please come. Avahan. That is done. Please come. So, Rig Veda is for invocation. Yajur Veda is for ritual performance. Okay, what sort of yajna is to be done at that time? What mantra is to be chanted? How is it to be done? And Sam Veda is for glorification. Just like when we want to invite someone, we want to invite some sannyasi, say, then we will send an email, please come. So that invocation is given in Rig Veda. This is a broad, there are exceptions, but in a broad sense. Then when he comes along, maybe we'll offer him a room, we'll offer him some prasad, we'll do some welcoming for him. And then we may offer some appreciation for him. That is, when we want to introduce him, say that he preaches all over the world and this and that. So like that, same way with the devatas. So Sam Veda is used for glorification. It is the Veda of musical glorification through songs. And among these, among the verses of Sam Veda, there is a section called Brihat Sam. Brihat Sam is a glorification of Indra, and the Apsaras in Swarga along with the Gandharvas, when they are singing and dancing, for Indra's pleasure they sing the Brihat Sam. So Brihat Sam is considered, in the material level, to be the best of glorifications, the best of songs. Of course, we have Ramananda Rai telling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the best song is about Radha, that he sings the glories of Radha and Krishna. That is transcendental. In the material realm, it's talking about Brihat Sam Tatha Sam Nam. And in Gayatri, Chanda Samaham. So Gayatri, here, now generally we know of Gayatri as the Gayatri mantra that we chant. That is of course true. Now Gayatri, it starts with Om Bhur Bhur Swaha, like that. Mantra which goes on. This is actually mentioned in the Rig Veda. And here when Krishna is saying Gayatri Chanda Samaham. Chanda is a particular meter. So chanda is a particular meter. And chanda is like different verses, we can sing in different chandas. Different music, for music there are agas, for verses I think there are chanda. So Gayatri is one particular kind of chanda. So here it's not primarily referring to Gayatri Devi, although that can also be said that among chandas Gayatri is a particular chanda. But normally Gayatri mantra, when we recite it, we don't recite it in a particular chanda. So the word Gayatri can refer to various things. Gayatri can refer to Gayatri Devi, Devi who is invoked by the chanting of the Gayatri mantra. Of course, she is the deity of the Gayatri Mantra, and whom we are invoking through the Gayatri Mantra is Surya Narayan. And it can also refer to a particular meter. So in this context, when Krishna is saying, among the chandas I am Gayatri, he is basically talking that there are various chandas and Gayatri is considered to be a very melodious chanda. So I am that Gayatri. And then I explained about the remaining two. Masana and Rutuna. So Akaraha means creator. Just like the ocean is called as Ratnakara. Ratna Akara, that which gives rise to Ratna. So Kusum Akara, Kusuma is flowers. So that which gives birth to flowers, that is Rutun, that is spring. So Rutunam Kusuma Akara. So next one, 36th verse. Dyutam Chalayatam Asmi, Dyutam Chalayatam Asmi. Tejas Tejas Vinamaham, Tejas Tejas Vinamaham. Jayosmi vyavasa yosmi, yosmi vyavasa yosmi. Satvam satvavatamaham, satvam satvavatamaham. So dyutam chalayatamasmi. So chala means cheating. So normally when one person has to cheat another person, how the cheating is done is some pickpocket is there. The other person is looking away. You put your hand in the pocket, somebody, the pickpocket comes in, puts the hand in the pocket and steals it away. But gambling is such a form of cheating that person voluntarily takes the money out of his pocket and puts it away. So in that sense it is a comprehensive cheating. Not just robbing the person of the money, but robbing the person of the intelligence also. So that he voluntarily gives up the money. So in that sense, it is a total kind of cheat. You make a complete fool out of the person. So dyutam chalayatam asmi. Among gambling, among cheaters, I am gambling. And tejas tejas vinamaham. So this Krishna describing over here that effulgence. So this is, he has talked about in the 7th chapter also when he's talking about the essence of things. So among splendid things, I am splendor. Jayosmi vyavasayosmi. So jaya is victory, vyavasaya is endeavor or adventure, we can say. So Krishna is telling that at the end of a project, when we get success, you know, sometimes, for example, say when India won the World Cup a few years ago, the kind of delirium people went into, I wonder what makes people so excited about it. Or sometimes, you know, in a tennis match, somebody wins, the person starts howling like a, you know what, you can't know whether such sounds can be produced by a human throat. So what happens? And actually, it's at that particular moment of victory, the kind of feelings that rush through a person, they are extremely intoxicating. So where do those feelings come from? Those feelings are so intoxicating that people want them again and again and again and again. So what are those feelings? Krishna is saying that actually, that taste of victory that you get, I am that taste of it. So of course, because that person has endeavored, because that person has done some karma, the person is getting that taste of victory. But that exhilarating taste of success, I am that. Jayosmi. And vyavasayosmi means, vyavasaya is sustained endeavor. How does Prabhupada translate vyavasaya here? Adventure. So, you know, there is this whole genre means category of on the edge sports. On the edge sports means people want to risk their lives. Some people, they sort of jump out of a helicopter and then they don't jump with a parachute. And they have it, they just fall, and they get a thrill out of falling. And when they come near the ground, then they will start the parachute. So if the parachute doesn't start, they'll just crash down. But the idea of sort of being on the border of life and death, that gives a certain kind of thrill. Or when there is this, what is the word for high speed sports? Or when they do racing, what is the
Formula One
racing? You know, within a moment or two, from zero speed, the vehicle just zoop, it propels to extremely high speed, and it can be completely disorienting at that particular time. And just a little bit shift over here or there, the person can just die also. But that kind of adventure, where there is risk, where there is thrill, and where one is sort of playing, flirting with danger. There are so many mystery novels and adventure stories wherein people get into danger and they come out of it. So normally speaking, if we see animals don't get into adventure for the sake of adventure. Isn't it?
You know, mouse doesn't think I will go near the mouth of a rat and the mouth of a cat and then run away from there. It doesn't do that.
So why? Because in the human species, actually, you know, we are all trying to experience God ultimately. You know, the soul has a developed enough consciousness by which the soul can experience the exhilaration of love for Krishna. But when that experience is not got by developing a relationship with Krishna, then we want to experience Krishna in some other ways. So even from, leave alone from the point of view of the animal kingdom, even from the scientific perspective, these sort of adventure sports go against Darwin's theory. The idea is everybody is struggling for survival. But here people are risking their life. Why? See, actually speaking, it's because all of us want to experience Krishna. And adventure and victory are ways in which we can experience Krishna in a fractional sense. It's only for a few moments, but there is an experience over there. And that's why people feel so intoxicated by this. But instead of that, a devotee, by developing a relationship with Krishna, as Sanjay will tell in 18.76 and 77, that Rushyami cha punah punah, Rushyami cha muhur muh, I am thrilled constantly at every moment. And then Sattvam Sattvavatam Aham. So I am the strength of the strong, or I am the power of the powerful. Now Vrishni Namba Sudevosmi, Namba Sudevosmi, Pandavanam Dhananjaya, Dhananjaya, Muni Namapyaham Vyasaha, Muni Namapyaham Vyasa, Kavina Mushina Kavi, Kavina Mushina Kavi. So, Jiva Goswami explains in Sandarbhas that here Vasudev refers to Balram, not to Krishna. Because Krishna is talking about himself, not talking about himself, he's talking about his opulences over here. So the Vasudev had Krishna was not the only son of Vasudev. Vasudev's son was also, through Rohini, was also Balramji. So because he's talking about his manifestations, here this Vasudev doesn't refer to Krishna, it refers to Balramji. And then Pandavanam Dhananjaya. So it's interesting that Arjuna is thinking, oh, among Pandavas he will say Yudhishthira, because Yudhishthira is Dharmaraj. He says, oh, Pandavana Dhananjaya. Pandavas is, I'm Arjuna. Oh, then Arjuna doesn't say, oh, I didn't know, we two are one. Then shut up now. There's no need for you to speak anything more. I didn't know, you have yourself said that I am God now. So he doesn't say that, because this is in terms of opulence. It is not in terms of ontological oneness. It's not in terms of Mayavad over here. So what were actually Arjuna's characteristics because of which he was so dear? Now, we see that at the start of the battle itself, that the characteristic of devotion is to choose God, not the world. Isn't it? The world is offering us so many pleasures, and we turn away from the pleasures of the world and choose God. That's what Arjuna did at the start of the battle. That is a sign of his devotion. And there are many other signs of devotion which we see in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam. And Kavina Ushanak, the Muninam Apyaham Vyasaha. So, Vyasaha is referring to Vyasadeva. So, Vyasa Muni. So, he is the compiler of all the Vedic literature. And actually, it's a Herculean feat to write all those Vedic literature, and that is, Artha Vyasadeva is also considered to be a literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And Ushina Kavi, now Shukracharya, sometimes we may deride him as a priest. Now he's a priest also, a paid priest is not considered to be very great. And that too a paid priest of the Rakshasas. But it's not that Shukracharya is any ordinary person. You know, if we look at the 8th canto, after the Bali Maharaj pastimes ends in chapter 24, in chapter 23, actually, when Vamanandev asked Ushina, Shukracharya, what was wrong with the sacrifice? And then he says, Mantratas Tantratas Chidram. Actually, if the names of Vishnu are chanted, then there is no flaw in the sacrifice. So even Shukracharya, who is actually a Karmakandi sacrifice, knows the power of Vishnu, knows the glory of the names of Vishnu. So it's not that he is ignorant. The only thing is, because he is attached, so he focuses on certain things and neglects certain things. So that among the category of priests, Shukracharya is definitely the greatest. And that's why Kavinam Ushana Kavi. And then Dandodamayatamasmi Nitirasmi Jigishatam Maunam Chaivasmi Guhyanam Jnanam Jnanavatamaham Dandodamayatamasmi. So Danda is Dandadina. What is it? Danda said, Danda and Danda are related. Danda is given for Danda. It's a stick. The idea is Damayata means to control or to suppress. Later on in the 18th chapter, when Krishna will talk about the senses, he will say the characteristic of the Brahmanas are Shama and Dama. So Shama is control of the mind. Dama is control of the senses. So Damayata means the ability, the controlling of the senses, controlling the behavior of people. So normally there are various ways to control people. So one is by instruction. But when instruction doesn't work, then punishment may have to give. Lato ke bhoot, baato se nahi maante. So sometimes punishment is required. And if punishment doesn't work, then a higher punishment has to be given. And the highest punishment is capital punishment. When a person may have to be killed, the person is incorrigible in this life. So Krishna is telling that among all forms of suppression, dando damayatamasmi, so punishment is required. And it is, if nothing else works, that's the last resort of the law. If that doesn't work, then one person has to be killed. So that's why it's said that Krishna is saying this is the strongest among all means of control. And we also see that at a highest level, when there is love, there is no fear of a person doing something wrong. When we love Krishna, we have such a higher taste and devotion that we will not do anything wrong. But till then, there is the danda is a very strong impetus for keeping ourselves under control. Now for example, when we come for Mangal Arati, so what happens is if there is no sort of danda for coming late for Mangal Arati, then what may happen is that we will just become lax gradually. So danda is important. So fear of it is said fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. The Bible says that fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Of course, it is not the end of wisdom. The end of wisdom is love of God. But fear of God is the beginning. Dando damayatam asmi. And nitirasmi jigishatam. And now, Krishna is telling over here that when many people can attain victory in battle, but when a person attains victory by virtuous means, by sticking to proper conduct, then actually it is a fair battle of skill and will. See, if a person cheats, why people are attracted to sports in a sense is because, you know, you can get to see competition among people. So it is many sports are essentially battles of skill and will. How talented a person is and how determined, how intensely a person is desiring and how we can keep his composure and move on towards the championship or whatever. So now, when a person, if a team wants to win the match and they have the umpires of their own country and the umpires just give all the other batsmen out, other countries batsmen out, you know, then that victory, there is no glory in that victory, isn't it? So that is like a backdoor victory. A backdoor victory means you just artificially got all the players out or something like that and then you won. But when there is a fair and square battle, And when after that there is victory, then that is a truly glorious victory. So Nitir Asmi Jigishatam. So among the victorious, those who are the morality of the victorious, I am that. Maunam Chaiva Asmi Guhyanam. So the best way to keep a secret is to keep it secret.
What that means is that don't tell it to anyone. There is no such thing as a secret kept between 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 people. It just keeps increasing. Sometimes we may have to tell some things to some devotees or some senior devotees, we want to consult something. But generally, the secrecy, the more it's shared, it gets less and less. So, maunam chaiva asmi guhyana. If you want to keep secret, the best way is not speak it. Not that you speak it and then try to break people ahead. Kisiko bolna mat, kisiko bolna mat. That is not as effective a way of keeping a secret. If truly want to keep a secret, don't speak it at all. Maunam chaiva asmi guhyana. And actually, secrecy is not necessarily bad. No, in certain things don't need to be known to everyone. It is Krishna has given us the facility to keep the thoughts of our mind private, isn't it? And that is useful. You know, if every one of us could see what everyone was thinking of everyone else, there would be no possibility of relationships, isn't it? Because we all get such kind of nasty thoughts at times. So, if you want to keep certain things, we don't want to bury those things. If certain things are troubling us, we do have to express them so that we can get them relieved. But the important thing is that certain things can and should be kept confidential. And the best way is by mauna. And jnanam jnanavatamaham. And knowledge of knowledgeable. This is related with later on, 15.15. Mattaha smutir jnanam apohanam cha. That says, I give knowledge. So Krishna is there referring more to a dynamic state that sometimes you remember, sometimes you forget. Here he is referring more to a steady state. And some people are very knowledgeable. So where does that knowledge come from? Now, among these 6 opulences that are there, if somebody is beautiful, somebody is wealthy, somebody is strong, somebody is famous, just by that alone, we won't normally mistake a person to be spiritually advanced. Isn't it? It's because somebody is good looking, we don't think that this person is spiritually advanced. But if somebody is very knowledgeable or somebody is very renowned, then we start thinking, oh, it must be spiritually advanced. Not necessarily like that. So sometimes there can be materialistic people who have no devotion, but they may have phenomenal levels of knowledge. So that knowledge is actually a manifestation of Krishna's opulence. But this is an important point now, because you're coming to the end of the chapter. You know, these vibhutis can be present among godly people, and these vibhutis can also be present among ungodly people. But jnana is an opulence of Krishna. And somebody who has got the karma from a previous life and has done the endeavor from this life, that person can become a phenomenal jnani. So there are some material scientists, some material scholars. They know so much. Their encyclopedia can their knowledge. So their vibhuti is also coming from God. But that vibhuti is not considered to be daivi vibhuti. It is considered to be asuri vibhuti. Why asuri vibhuti? Because that is not taking them towards God, nor is it taking others towards God. So there may be some movie singers who sing very sweetly. Now their singing ability is coming from God. But is it taking them towards God? If they are just singing mundane songs, it is not. So jnana, so all these are vibhutis, definitely. But by seeing them, we can remember Krishna. When Hanumanji sees Ravana for the first time, second time actually, first time he sees Ravana when he's sleeping in the bed chambers when he's searching at night. After that when he's arrested, and then he sees Ravana in the court. So there in the court, Ravana is looking majestic. And the first thought that he gets in his mind is, if only Ravana had been a devotee, he would have been such a great protector of the gods. So that is the glory of the Krishna consciousness of Hanuman. That is not the glory of Ravana. Isn't it? Ravana had, by his karma and whatever, he had gotten opulence. But it is Hanumanji's consciousness why she thinks, oh, only if this had been engaged in Krishna's service. So that vibhuti was taking Ravana away from God, from Ram, but that increased Hanuman's remembrance of God. So even by seeing the vibhuti of a demoniac person, we can increase our Krishna consciousness. We can remember Krishna. But we have to see whether that vibhuti is taking us towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Jnanam jnanavatamaham.
యచ్చాపి సర్వభూతానాం యచ్చాపి సర్వభూతానాం బీజం తదహం అర్జున బీజం తదహం అర్జున న తదస్తి వినాయత్స్యాన్ న తదస్తి వినాయత్స్యాన్ మయా భూతం చరాచరం మయా భూతం చరాచరం యచ్చాపి సర్వభూతానాం సో for all living beings bijam tadaham arjuna that I am the seed so how is krishna the seed for all living beings because you know wherever life manifests it's actually a miracle and that creation that seed of creation comes ultimately from krishna the soul is a part of krishna the soul is what gives life to the body and how the soul comes into a particular biological medium where life manifests that is a mysterious process So that is actually the arrangement of Krishna. Na tad asti vinayatsyan maya bhutam characharam. That without me, nothing can exist. So then somebody will say that so Krishna is now here giving sort of generic conclusions. He has given many specific examples. Okay, among this I am this, among this I am that. So now if Krishna says that, okay, among aquatics I am shark, then does that mean I am not the fish? Or I am not the tadpole? Or I am not the starfish? No, actually everything exists because of me. So now this, in these three verses are giving last four verses are giving conclusion. So first he is making a very clear statement that actually the existence of everything is sustained by me alone. This is similar to 10.8. Aham sarvasya prabho mattaha sarvam pravartate. So remember I explained what is the difference between these two lines? Prabhava and pravartate. Prabhava refers to the origin. Pravartate refers to the maintenance. By me everything comes, by me everything, from me everything comes, by me everything is maintained. So Krishna is telling over here, same point over here, I am the generating seed of everything. So 10.39 is essentially repeating 10.8. So he is telling further that, Natadasti vinayatsyan maya bhutam chara acharam. That nothing can exist, chara or achara, without me. I am the sustenance of everything that exists. So these are concluding verses. He has finished the list of his opulences. And then, if everything is ultimately an opulence of Krishna, then somebody may get the question, then why has Krishna spoken only these few things? Only these specific opulences, why has he spoken? So he addresses that in that verse, this verse. Nantosti mama divyanam, nantosti mama divyanam, vibhutinam parantapa, eshatuddeshatah prokto, vibhuter vistaro maya. So, na antosti mama divyanam. Actually, my, there is no end. Na antosti. And what are these? Divya vibhuti. Divine opulences, there is no end to it. Then, esha tuddeshataha. Tuddeshataha means as a sample, as a representative, as a few examples I have given this. Vibhuter vistaro maya. Again, he says these are vistar. There are many, many opulences like this. So, first Krishna has said, 39th verse, that everything is sustained by me, everything comes from me. Then 40th he says, actually my opulences are endless. Then, is there some general principle by which we can know which are the opulences of Krishna? If he is saying that everything comes from me, but my opulences are so many, I have just given a few samples. Now, are these opulences there apart from these samples also? Yes, there are. So, how can we know that? That principle Krishna will tell in the next verse. So, I have given a list. But you can expand this list based on understanding this principle. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam, yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam, Shri madurjitam evava, tatta devava gacchatvam, mamatejomsha sambhava. Yes, yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam. So wherever you see the vibhuti, and what are the vibhutis? Krishna gives three characteristics. These are three, not an exhaustive list. It's a typical representative list. Shrimat is beautiful. Urjitam is glorious. Evava. So, wherever there is all that opulent, beautiful and glorious, that is Mama Tejomsha Sambhava. That is a spark of my splendor. So, in this material world, whenever we see anything that attracts our attention, we can use this as a generic principle. You know, so if somebody says that, you know, I'm madly attracted to the, say, the beauty of this film star, or to the style of this cricketer, or to this thing or that thing. Yes, fine. If you're attracted, that is good. But where does that attraction come from? That same person who now hits a sixer so expertly, you know, when that person was born, that person didn't even know what was a bat, isn't it? So where did that opulence come from? Where did that actually? It's God's grace. So wherever we see anything attractive in this verse can help us to not let that attractiveness disconnect us from Krishna, but to let it reconnect us with Krishna. See, this verse offers us a balance between the two extremes. One extreme is we see the attractiveness of this world as inherently, independently attractive, and get attracted to it and forget Krishna. That is the path of Karmakanda. In material enjoyment, I just get attracted to things of this world and I forget God. On the other hand, the path of Jnana is everything in this world is false. Just forget the world, get out of the world. So now this path is actually difficult to sustain because ultimately our heart needs some attraction. So there is, remember we discussed, don't romanticize the world, don't demonize the world, utilize the world. So romanticize means I get attracted only to the world and forget everything else. Forget God rather. Demonize the world means, oh, this world is just maya, maya, maya. Turn away from the world. Make the world into a demon and think that I'll focus only on God. So romanticizing the world is the path of karma. Demonizing the world is the path of jnana. Utilizing the world is the path of bhakti. So when we see attractive things in this world, we can acknowledge their attractiveness, but then say, okay, this attractiveness comes from Krishna. That principle Krishna is giving over here. Yadyad vibhuti mat sattvam. And actually this, if we can actually understand this principle, this can help us to become free from envy. When we see some good qualities in someone else, if we see their good qualities as independent of Krishna, then we will feel envious of that person. Oh, why does this person have these qualities and I don't have these qualities? But if we think, okay, this person, he has such attractive qualities and these come from Krishna. So how attractive Krishna must be. So actually, when we want to use whatever attractive qualities we have to gain fame in this world, then others' attractiveness makes us insecure. If I want to sing so that people will praise me, oh, what a good singer I am. Then if somebody else sings better than me, then I become insecure. Oh, people get attracted more to him than to me. But if my goal is to become attracted to Krishna, then I am using my vaka shakti, I am using my singing power, singing ability to glorify Krishna, by which I become attracted to him. And I also see others' singing ability and think, oh, this person is reflecting a spark of Krishna's all attractive singing ability. So if this is attracting so much, so many people, how much more will Krishna attract? And in this way, we can actually, wherever we see anything attractive, rather than becoming competitive, we can become more devotional. We can become more, instead of becoming competitive, we can become contemplative. We can focus on redirecting our attraction to Krishna based on our remembrance of Krishna that the opulences of others brings. Mama tejomsh sambhavam. And then Krishna says, but actually again he says, there's no need to give me this, gives entire opulence, list of opulence, because he says one more concluding verse which will become the seed for the next chapter. Athava bahunaitena, athava bahunaitena, kim jnatena tava arjuna, kim jnatena tava arjuna, vishtabhyahamidam krishnam, vishtabhyahamidam krishnam, ekamshena stito jagat, ekamshena stito jagat. So athava, otherwise, or you know, bahunaitena kim jnatena, what is the use of I telling you about all my opulences? Why? Ekamshena, vishtabhyam is pervaded entirely. Pervaded by what? Ekamsha, by only one fragment. Idam jagat. So by one fragment of myself, I sustain the whole jagat. So this is referring to which fragment of Krishna? Super soul, yes. Siradaksha Vishnu. He permeates all of existence. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. By one fragment, I pervade all of the creation. So in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sixth chapter, which is a discussion between Vidura and Maitreya, the chapter is entitled as Creation of the Universal Form. So there it is described that how all the whole universe was created. Brahmaji had done his creation, and the demigods has also been created. But the universe was not functioning only till the Lord entered into it. Now the demigod of speech was there, but the Vishwarup was not able to speak. The demigod controlling the hand was there, but the hands of the Vishwarup were not moving. But only when the Lord Vishnu entered into the world, then all of life came about. So the Virat Roop is a conceptual form meant to enhance our appreciation of the glories of the Lord. So this particular analysis explains that how the various faculties and the various personalities associated with those faculties may both be there, but still the activity will not happen till there is a presence of the divinity. So there is faculty, there is personality, there is activity, and there is divinity. So faculty is, say, the power of speaking. That's my faculty. And the personality is, I am the soul who is present over here. But then the faculty and the personality both may be present, but the activity will not happen. Activity is speaking till there is the divinity. There is the Lord present within it. So Ekamishena Siddhojaga. So that 3.6 in the Bhagavatam illustrates that only when the super soul enters into this world, then everything else becomes active. So the faculty and the personality get the capacity to do activity by the presence of divinity. So Ekam Shena Stito Jagat. By one fragment of myself, I pervade all of existence. So in a sense, the universal form is like a material body. It's like we have a material body. So when the universal form is talked about, that is also talked about in material terms. When it is talked about in material terms, the body has a soul in it. And the soul gives life to the body. Similarly, the Virata Rupa has a soul. And that soul is actually the super soul. So Krishna is referring to that over there. So that is the link over here. Krishna is telling. So in a sense, Krishna says in this chapter that Ekam Shena Stito Jagat. By one fragment of me, I am pervaded. I am pervading all of creation. So in the next chapter, Arjuna will ask Krishna, can you please show me this form? Show me how you pervade all of creation. And what does Krishna do? Krishna says the Vishwarupa. So Krishna doesn't show, in a sense, the super soul within the universe. He shows the universal form only. Why? Because he himself is the super soul. So, just like there is a soul inside the body. So similarly, there is a Virat Rupa, there is a universal form, and there is the super soul, who is an expansion of Krishna. Just try to understand this flow. See, Krishna is here, he's in the spiritual world. And then Krishna is telling, Ek Amsha of mine is the super soul. And this super soul is pervading all of creation. Okay? So there's a three level connection. Krishna, super soul, and Virat Roop, universal form. So when Arjuna asks Krishna, in the next chapter we'll ask, how do you pervade the universe? Please show it to me. Now what will Krishna show? Will Krishna show how his super soul form extends with the head from the Satyaloka to the legs to the Naraka? No, he doesn't show that super soul form just being so high. He actually shows the universal form. That is the material manifestation. So normally, we with our material eyes can see material things. So when he shows the pervasion, he shows the pervasion how? By showing how from him the Virat Rupa manifests. Is this point clear what I'm saying? See, Arjuna asks, how please show me how you pervade everything. So Krishna will describe by showing that how I am here, and next moment you see the whole universal form. Where does that come from? It has come from me. So I am pervading this whole form, and I can reveal this whole form to you. That's how Krishna answers Arjuna's question. We'll discuss more about this in tomorrow's class. In this chapter, we discussed, starting with the continuation of the ninth chapter, the focus on the glories of the Supreme Lord. So that glory of the Supreme Lord talked about how he is the source of everything, and it began with if one understands this, so vikalpena yogena yujyate natra samshaya. In 10.3 Krishna describes that if you understand my glory, sarva papai pramuchyate, you will become free from all sins. That the first result of understanding Krishna. Then in 10.7 he describes the full result. If you understand my glories, you will become purified of all sins. But along with that, yujyate natra samshaya, you will engage in my pure devotional service. So vikalpena yogina, without any alternative and without any doubt, wholeheartedly you will engage in my service. And that Krishna summarizes in Chatushloki Gita. And after Chatushloki Gita, Arjuna accepts whatever Krishna has said, acknowledges Krishna's supremacy, states that what you have said is also confirmed by the great sages, and then asks, please help me to remember you in this material world. And in response to that, from verse 20 onwards till verse 38, Krishna gives a list of his various opulences in the material world. And Krishna gives four summary verses where he describes everything is sustained by me, but that which is attractive within everything that is sustained by me, that is reflecting a spark of my glory, and you can use that to remember me. Any question? Okay, yes. Yes. There is this verse. Samatve naiva viksheta sapashandi bhavedruva. Brahma rudrati devatam. So what it refers to is that there are beings who are in the material realm and there are beings who are in the spiritual realm. So ultimately Lord Vishnu alone is transcendental. Lord Brahma, he is exalted but not transcendental. Lord Shiva, if it's referring to Sadashiv, then he is transcendental. But quite often whenever the scriptures talk about Lord Shiva, they refer not to the Sadashiva, they refer to Lord Shiva who is in Kailash. No, Sada, I think I have discussed this earlier, isn't it? In our, I think, Ishopanishad class we have discussed it. Sadashiva lives at the border of the material and spiritual world. So he is transcendental. Normally speaking, when the scriptures refer to Shiva, he is often referred to as Kailash, who is in the Kailashapati, who is there in the Kailash in the celestial areas. So he is not considered transcendental. So the essence of offense is to equate the material with the spiritual. That is the essence of offense. You know, when we say that to see the Vaishnava Jati Buddhi, Arche Vishnu Shiladir, Guru Shunarmati. So what is all this doing? We are seeing the spiritual to be material. So that is the principle. Now that which is transcendental, that is Vishnu, and that which is material, in the sense that they are in material existence, Shiva or Vishnu, when we equate the two, that leads to the continuation of the cycle of birth. So it's not so much, certainly that misunderstanding is there, it's a misunderstanding that needs to be corrected, but underlying the misunderstanding is an equalization of the material and spiritual. And that is the cause of continuation of material existence. Once one understands, okay, this is matter, this is spirit, and I have to go from matter to spirit, then that paves the pathway to liberation. It's clear? Yes, last question.
This analysis you gave faculty.
Yeah, faculty, ability.
Personality and reality.
Yeah.
Is it based on 18.14?
Is it based on 18.14? There is slightly difference because there is also circumstance over there. It's a very important verse. We'll discuss that when we come to it. But here Krishna is more talking about the context of how he is the sustainer of everything. So, and without him, nothing can happen. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktarinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandai. Thank you.